Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. It is such a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, where we talk about the issues and the policies and the lunacy that is going on in government here in the Pacific Northwest, you're certainly welcome to join us. The number is 866-HEY-LARS. That is, naysayers go first at 866-439-5277. You can always send emails. I try to answer everyone. talk@LarsLarson.com. And they go to nobody but me. They don't go to an intern or a producer. As much as I trust my three great producers, they do not go to them. They come to me. And of course, you can vote in our Twitter poll as well. The Twitter poll is going to be interesting because we're in an election year, and Oregon, not Washington, but Oregon is choosing a new governor. And we can only hope that after more than a third of a century of Democrat governors, and you see what's been left behind, the waste that they have laid across the state, that maybe the voters will choose somebody else. Now, I have lots of people who say, Lars, you're crazy. They're never going to get a Republican governor in. Let me put it to you this way. My friends at Willamette Week that I'm going to talk about another issue about a little bit later on this hour, they did something clever. They went out to all the gubernatorial candidates, the independent, Betsy Johnson, the three Republicans, the three Democrats, and they said, should the threat of Omicron be closing our public schools? And do you know what? It split right down party lines. The Democrats said close the schools. The Republicans say do not. And I would ask you to think about this. During an election year, how many parents out there do you suppose are really thrilled to hear that the schools, which didn't operate much at all last year, didn't really operate in any fashion in 2020, that how many of those voter parents out there and voter family members are thrilled that the schools are not going to be operating? I would imagine the answer is going to be very, very few of them are thrilled with that piece of news. And the fact that after a couple of years of this, the schools have now, the public schools, the ones run by government agencies, have not figured out how to get it done. Most of the charter schools are getting it done. Most of the private schools are getting it done. But the government-run schools, well, government could screw up an ice cream sundae most days of the week. So are they incapable of running the schools? They can't run the Amtrak. They can't run the Postal Service. They can't run most of anything. The IRS actually took back a brothel in Nevada years ago and is famously unable to make money with a brothel. So if you want to ask, is the government capable of actually operating the schools? The answer is generally no. And so what do the Democrats say? They say close the schools. The Republican candidates say do not do that. And I guess the only no answer they got was Tina Kotek, who apparently thought that by not answering the question, we wouldn't know exactly what that meant. It means she wants to answer the question, but realizes if she does, she's likely to lose voters. Anyway, our question is, should the threat of Omicron be closing the public schools? The answer, I would say, is no, it shouldn't be. And I could give you chapter and verse on that and probably will when I get a naysayer later on. Today's Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, a little bit later on this hour, I've got a member of the Washington State Legislature on, and he has the most common sense one-line bill you've ever seen. Have you heard about the schools both in Oregon and Washington that are telling kids, you've got to eat your lunch outside because of Omicron? And you're sitting on an orange Homer bucket, and they say the kids have to eat lunch outside unless the temperature is below 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, does anybody think that's a great idea? There may be some parents who say, oh, yeah, it's a fantastic idea. You say kids play outside all the time. Yeah, when you're playing, you're running around, you stay warm. When you're sitting on an orange plastic bucket trying to eat your lunch in 39-degree weather, not as easy to stay warm. So he's got a bill that would actually prohibit that. We'll talk to him in just a short while. But I wanted to start with something else. I want to start with something that, you know, when lawyers complain that they're not making enough money, most of us don't have a whole lot of sympathy for the shysters out there who charge enormous amounts of money and make enormous amounts of money as lawyers. And then you've got the crowd of people who call themselves the indigent defense bar. Now, what's indigent defense? Well, the Constitution guarantees the right of counsel for anyone who's accused of a crime. It doesn't actually say lawyer, but that's an argument for another day. It says counsel. And indigent defense, if you've ever heard, either because you've been arrested or because you watch a lot of TV and movies, the Miranda warning that says if you cannot afford a lawyer, one will be provided for you at taxpayer expense. That's the guarantee. So the state of Oregon has decided over the decades to be overly generous with so-called indigent defense. I'm not suggesting that if somebody's accused of a serious crime that they shouldn't get a lawyer. But there are crimes for which you're not likely to be locked up. You're not going to get a jail sentence. You're going to get a fine, something. You still get a lawyer. And then Oregon goes even farther than that. The state even pays for endless appeals under what is known as post-conviction relief. In other words, after you've been convicted, after you've exhausted every single one of your possible appeals to higher courts, and you've been told, no, you are a convict, you are a criminal, you have been convicted, and you have no more appeals, believe it or not, you're allowed to do another set of appeals called post-conviction relief. And guess what? Oregon, in its amazing generosity with your money, decided we're going to pay for lawyers to do these post-conviction relief cases. Endless appeals by people who are already in prison, already convicted, who have already run through every last one of their possible appeals, get something called post-conviction relief. Usually it involves a lawyer representing the criminal who is saying this guy's lawyer wasn't any good. And oftentimes they even get the lawyer who represented the criminal to agree and say, you're right, I was terrible, Your Honor. You should let this guy or gal go free. That's what post-conviction relief is. It's a gigantic joke. It is usually unsuccessful. It is based on cockamamie notions, but we pay for it. So what do we have now? We have the Office of Public Defense Services, and they say, gosh, we've got all these indigent people, and some of that may be amplified by the fact that both Oregon and Washington have become states that are big magnets for so-called homeless, meaning drug-addicted people living on the streets for the most part, and we have too many indigent people, and we don't have enough lawyers to go around. Do you know what the current budget for indigent defense, and this is for the state of Oregon, Washington doesn't seem to have this problem, but maybe it does, is almost $500 million every 2 years. On a biennial budget, which is the way the state budgets things, almost $500 million every 2 years to provide lawyers for the indigent, including that post-conviction relief cockamamie nonsense I was telling you about a moment ago. And some of these lawyers, one lawyer in 2020, an indigent defense lawyer defending the poor, he only pulled down annual compensation of $461,000. Yeah, it's usually outside the norm, but still, indigent defense lawyers make really good money, and they make it out of your pocket, and they make it mostly defending people who are guilty. But now they say $500 million, or almost $500 million, ain't enough. You've got to give us more. And I would suggest the best way to provide that money, knock off all the post-conviction relief, not required by the Constitution, not required by the law, doesn't even make sense. Knock that stuff off. You'll have plenty of resources to take care of providing everybody's constitutional rights. Anyway, welcome to Wednesday, 866-439-5277. Coming up, inflation and gas and groceries, oh my. But Joe Biden can't be bothered with that. He has a filibuster he has to blow up so the feds can take over state elections. You'll get my comments on it coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
I wonder just how much Joe Biden incompetence Americans are actually going to stand for. Today we learned that inflation hit a mark we haven't seen since 1982. Average wages were up almost 5% last year. That sounds like good news till you factor in inflation. When you put the two numbers together, real spending power went down 2.5%. In other words, your paycheck got smaller last year under Biden. No wonder America's most popular slogan is, "Let's go, Brandon," or the slightly more direct FJB. On his first day on the job, Biden declared war on energy, and now gas prices are 50% higher. He declared war on private business. He ignored 2 million illegal aliens crossing the border and ignored the massive supply chain mess that has left stores in major cities, even Washington, D.C., with empty shelves. Inflation is now baked in the cake. And what was Beijing Biden doing yesterday? Addressing the real issues hurting Americans? No, not at all. The devil went down to Georgia to campaign for busting the filibuster so that Democrats can ram through a federal takeover of elections. Since his Democrat Party can't actually run on its actual track record, they need to cheat. On Getter, Andrew Peller wrote in, Lars, convicted Boston bomber Tsarnaev received COVID cash? Really? Hard to square this waste while parroting the line that the rich don't pay their fair share. If the rich don't pay their fair share, how can there be so many people that don't need to file owe nothing and still get a government check? And now today's Girl of the Day.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, I'm going to give the grill to a brand new law that went into effect on the first of the year, and it affects Oregon, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the same kind of thing happen in Washington State. You may not realize this, but you are helping to pay for electric car chargers. And if you say, Lars, I don't own an electric car, and that's exactly the point. Most people do not own an electric car. They've chosen a sensible automobile and not the taxpayer-subsidized variety. Well, Oregon's legislature, at the end of last year's session, passed House Bill 2165. It sets a tax on your utility bill, and the proceeds from that tax will pay for what they call transportation electrification infrastructure. Translation, car chargers. Oh, by the way, they say that at least half of the money has to be spent on what they call underserved communities. So all the poor people who are buying electric cars, I know there are going to be a whole bunch of them, aren't there, are going to be getting a free car charger courtesy of you, and you're paying the bill. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest. They're now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus. Online, rivercityusa.com/careers. Chris Fletcher writes in from Bellingham. Lars, apparently the employers of this state are sufficiently scared of our governor that even though the constitutionally illegal income tax for that worthless long-term care act, they're withholding it anyways. The answer I got tonight after seeing my first check and questioning, well, we didn't want to see you guys hit with a big deduction if it proceeds. I, for one, having spent years in the military, know that once the governor gets a hold of your money, it is nearly impossible to get it back. Of course, the governor, the government presented employers with a cloudy option on this withholding, saying, well, once we figure this out, it'll start. I personally suspect this will never materialize. Many people lose hundreds of dollars they'll never see again. For me, personally, it's $28 a month, but that $28 represents four trips to work and home each month in Joe Biden's inflation aid, signed Chris Fletcher in Bellingham. Now, to one of the great representatives from the Republican side of the aisle at the legislature, in this case in Olympia, Chris Corey joins me now. Chris, glad you could take a few minutes with me.
Hey, appreciate being with you. Good to be here.
So what'd you think when you heard the news and the story made the rounds nationally that in both Oregon and Washington, in your case, you're more concerned with Washington State, they're making kids eat their school lunches out of doors as long as the temperature is above about 38 or 40 degrees. We've seen pictures of them, these kids sitting on orange Homer buckets, and you decided to do something about it. Tell me what you're doing.
Yeah, I've introduced House Bill 1976, which would prevent schools from forcing their kids to eat outside at any temperatures under 60 degrees. Unfortunately, we're living in the strangest timeline, so bills like this are necessary. I never would have thought that I'd be working on this when I entered the legislature 3 years ago. Yet here we are. We got to deal with stuff like this, asinine rules that make no sense and are putting our kids at more risk than they're supposedly preventing them from.
Now, you're a member of the Grand Old Party. Do you think you can get your colleagues from the Democrat Party side of the aisle to actually join in on this, or they're going to fight you?
I don't think they're going to fight me. I mean, it is going to be, you know, more of a long haul. We don't tend to like to run bills that point out, you know, issues with how we're handling COVID. But, a lot of those Democrats are also parents, and they can't be happy that their kids might be in a similar situation, and it just doesn't make sense based on the science.
Representative Corey, I'm with you, though. This shouldn't have ever had to go to legislation. Shouldn't there be a superintendent out there, or at the very least a principal, or maybe even some teachers who say, boss, we can't do this to these little kids, send them outside in 39-degree weather? And yet, apparently, nobody in the education, you know, structure, the infrastructure out there, superintendents, principals, and teachers, thought to object to this?
Well, you know, I can't speak to specific districts, but I will say what we've seen out of OSPI, which is the statewide, you know, Office of the Public Superintendent, is that they have come with a very big top-down mentality where you are not allowed to question them. And they threaten withholding funds if you do. We've seen it on other bills and other issues where they've said, if you don't do as we say, we'll take money away, which really just goes to prove how, you know, this system is really set up for the children, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. We hear that phrase every time there's about to be a teacher strike. You come from the private sector, don't you?
Yes, I've been in the insurance industry side since basically I graduated college almost 20 years ago.
Okay, so if you're going to hire somebody to run anything, you pay them more money if they have more responsibility. If we've got a bunch of people that are just told, just follow the orders that come down from above, why are we paying superintendents and principals so much money? I mean, most of them make six figures. Some of them make a fraction of $1 million a year. I mean, a third or a quarter of $1 million a year. If they're just, you know, folks who follow the rule book and follow the dictates from above, I don't think there's any reason to have to pay them six-figure salaries, do you?
Well, I think is more concerning is that we have a bureaucracy in Olympia that is threatening to withhold funds and obviously put school boards and school administrators in a really bad position. Do we stand up and say, no, this isn't your right? Or do we lose funding and have to shut doors? I mean, that's an untenable position for these teachers. I will say, though, I have had conversations with superintendents, fortunately not in my district, but in other districts, that have asked and tried to get me to support legislation to take away collective bargaining from them and other aspects of their job. And I've questioned them on that, Lars. I've said, okay, if the legislature is going to do all of these things, why don't we just have one unified school district for the state and we can run it all out of Olympia? It'd be a lot simpler.
I like that idea. You know, Representative Corey, I'm up against a break, but I so appreciate you doing this. And let's hope House Bill 1976, banning the practice of making little kids eat outside in the cold, I hope that one flies through the legislature. Coming up, we're going to talk about the OLCC and a product that's not pot, but is still getting the bum's rush from local stores. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly, but I have a confession to make as I introduce my friend Aaron Mesh, who's the news editor at Willamette Week, and we have him on, or Nigel Jake was on, to talk about some of the top stories they've been covering because they're very interesting, whether I agree with the premise or not. But I think this one is especially fun because while I am not in favor and never was in favor of legalization of pot, I have nothing against the hemp products that they've come up with that don't have THC in them. And yet here's the state of Oregon and the OLCC, which is now the cannabis agency as well as the booze agency, because it's an example of the deep state that all of us have complained about. Faceless, unaccountable bureaucrats, many of them in Washington, D.C., but there's a share of them in Olympia and Boise and Salem as well. And they screw things up with little recourse by the people they're hurting or anybody else. And the folks who voted for Kate Brown and folks like and people like that vote for Democrats usually benefit from the deep state doing these kind of regulatory excesses. But now they're getting bit on the backside. So, Aaron, I have to confess to a little bit of what the Germans call Schadenfreude. I'm actually kind of laughing that you're now upset that the bureaucracy is doing to you what it's been doing to a lot of us on the right for a long, long time. Welcome back.
It's good to be here. Happy New Year, and thanks for having me. So I would agree that there's an irony here, and there is a Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude is probably one of the several unfamiliar words in this story, because this is a story about byproducts of hemp, and a lot of these have unusual names. But I think it's correct, basically, that what happened here is that about 2 years ago, there was an innovation in the hemp industry, and it kind of was necessity as the mother of invention. Hemp has seen its prices drop through the floor since its federal legalization, and a lot of people are trying to figure out what to do with their excess hemp. And some of that hemp is being used to essentially mine out the chemicals, the cannabinoids inside of hemp, to put them inside of edibles. So when you go to grocery stores, you see in places like New Season, frankly, the kind of grocery stores that readers of Willamette Week shop at a lot, and perhaps listeners of the Lars Larson Show turn up their nose at.
Some
of these hippier grocery stores carry a variety of CBD products. But some of these products don't just have CBD in them. They have something called CBN, which the closest way I can describe that is, like, what if you took, like, some of the chemicals from hemp and squashed them into a concentrate. So by doing that, you can put them inside of chocolates. You can put them inside of gummy bears. And supposedly they're a natural sleep aid. Well, lately, the OLCC has gotten wind of this and has said no more until we've been able to examine these products, or maybe even until the federal government says it's okay. You can't sell any more of these gummy bears in grocery stores.
Okay, let me throw one thing in that we need to make clear. None of this stuff is intoxicating. None of this stuff gets you high, correct?
That's a great point. So all of this stuff does is essentially, I think it probably has about this. I don't want to, like, I've never tried it, so I can't tell you the experience. But my suspicion is that we're talking about stuff that's like the same potency as like taking melatonin. Like, these are like, you, no one, like, you know, it's not like cough syrup. No one is going into new seasons and scooping up all the melatonin to make bathtub melatonin. And I think the same thing goes here, that like with CBN, it's not really possible to get yourself high off of this concentrate. What you can do is you might get like kind of restful and drowsy, and you shouldn't operate heavy machinery.
So you could vote as a Democrat at that point. But I'm just suggesting that, you know, but here's what I get a kick out of, Aaron. The OLCC, which is now the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission instead of the Oregon Liquor and Control Commission, a commission that I don't even think should exist for booze or for pot, you know, but they do. And they have effectively said, it'd be like if you and I came out with a new soda pop and they said, well, there's no proof that soda pop is not intoxicating, Lars and Aaron. So until you prove it's not intoxicating, we're going to assume that we have the right to regulate it. That's their approach to regulation. Everything that isn't proven to be not under their venue or their purview is under their purview.
I mean, I think it's an age-old debate, right? So, like, the argument that the OLCC made to us on this point was you don't experiment on human beings on grocery store shelves. But before you interrupt me there, I would argue that, like, I can state the counterpoint pretty easily, which is, of course, we experiment on human beings on grocery store shelves. Like, the very beginnings of soda pop are, in fact, putting a variety of ingredients, including originally cocaine, into a fountain drink and saying, like, you're gonna feel great.
It's the pause that refreshes, right?
I just think it is naive to believe that, like, the vast majority of grocery products that say new and improved are not in some way experimenting on human beings. The question always is kind of the expanse of government and the expanse of innovation. How much do you want to risk on the grocery shelves, and how much do you want to regulate?
Well, see, I think you're making it too complicated. What does the OLC's charter say it's in charge of? It's in charge of alcoholic beverages, and it's in charge of pot and, you know, cannabis. And you say, well, then anything that has a connection to cannabis is connected. I mean, by that logic, they could say rye whiskey is made out of rye. So rye bread is under the purview of the OLCC by that argument, until you prove that rye bread is not intoxicating. And I've actually had rye bread that I would call intoxicating, although you never get high.
Fair enough. I think that there's a number of companies that right now that are looking for any legal means to challenge the OLCC's decision. And if they don't win in court, they're going to end up leaving the state. It is going to end up costing Oregon business. And those businesses are the kinds of businesses that Democrats tend to shop at. You have places like, although I'm not saying Republicans don't enjoy a good CBD gummy bear. Like, I don't see why they wouldn't. But you have these places like Grand Chocolates that specializes in chocolates that are also restful, and I don't think they're going to make it. They're going to leave Oregon. They're going to go to Washington. They're going to go to Idaho.
They are going to make it. They're just going to make. I mean, this Christine Smith that you feature in Sophie Peel's story has said, "Hey, to heck with Oregon. Oregon, pound sand. I'm taking my business and I'm going to move out of the state." That's what she said, right?
Yes. Yeah, so they're going to make it, but they're not going to make it here. They're going to make it anywhere.
Yeah, so Oregon can have the counterpoint to the New York slogan. If you can't make it in Oregon, you can make it anywhere else.
That may in fact be what Oregon's regulations do to the hemp industry.
Well, I mean, what does this say about a state that becomes so business unfriendly that even on hippy dippy products like CBN that they find themselves unwelcome in the state? Do they want the whole state to go into poverty or something? They've killed fishing, they've killed farming, they're killing the timber industry, and now they're going to kill part of the pot or hemp industry as well. What's going to be left? Pouring Starbucks?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about hemp is that it's actually not a very profitable business overall. This was a bit of a last gasp. It's shocking the degree to which hemp prices have fallen through the floor. I believe they've gone from $42 a pound to $1 a pound.
Aaron, you know, if you go back 10 years when the pot thing was being debated before it got voted on and legalized, I kept telling people, I said, well, hemp, it's this amazing product. I said, if it's an amazing product and it's legal most of the world, literally, why is there only 400,000 acres of it being grown on planet Earth? And they would all say, it's because it's illegal in America. I said, so it's legal in the rest of the world. For the most part, every country makes hemp legal. And there's only 400,000 acres of it, which you could fit between Eugene and Corvallis from I-5 to the Coast Range. That's how much hemp was being grown in the world. And I kept telling people, there ain't no money there. And they said, oh, yeah, there will be as soon as we legalize it. And I kept saying, no, it's not. And what's happening? Well, they're saying, gee, we grew all this hemp and there's no money in it. Yeah, you should have listened.
It is the overwhelming story of Oregon's cannabis, hemp, anything that has to do with the pot plant is a story of oversupply and sort of a surprising level of underdemand.
Well, look at this. We've got an oversupply of Democrats in Oregon, too, but voters can fix that this November. That's Aaron Mesh, the news editor at Willamette Week. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails, and we'll talk about a warning from Europe about booster shots you may not have heard on the mainstream media. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails, and I'm going to go to those in just a moment. In a bit, I'm going to give you that warning that's coming out of Europe right now. When you hear Joe Biden saying, well, get your shot and get your booster, and people have been asking, how many boosters are we going to need? Europe is now saying, watch out, too many of them is going to actually weaken your immune system. I'll give you the source on that, where it came from, and it's solid. Today's Twitter poll, should the threat of Omicron be closing public schools? And I had one wit write to me and say, Lars, some of the schools are already closing. Yes, I'm asking, should the threat of Omicron be closing schools, as though it's already happening? And yes, it is. And what kind of response do you get from Republican candidates for governor, at least in the state of Oregon? Republicans say, do not close the schools, keep them open. The Democrats, all three of them, except Tina Kotek, who has no opinion. That's great. A governor candidate who has no opinion, and yet she may be the front-running candidate since they knocked out Kristoff. Democrats say close the schools because they got to back up their union buddies among the ranks of teachers. Republicans say do not. Today's Twitter poll brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. And let me go to Bill. Hey, Bill, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was listening to you talk about OPDS, the public defense payments, and I just wanted to you were talking about post-conviction relief, PCRs, and two things. First, OPDS pays for a lot more than attorneys. They pay for the doctors and psychiatrists that investigate whether the patient, whether the defendant is fit for trial or not, with mental illness being rampant right now. They pay for private investigators and polygraph people and others to help the defense prepare their cases.
Yes, they do.
But the post-conviction relief, I work in the system, and I've seen situations where public defenders have got defendants to plead guilty to something that they're not guilty of, and then that person files a post-conviction relief later on, and it does get overturned.
No, I get there that, but Bill, I'm not Bill, stop for a second. I'm not arguing that there aren't some legitimate post-conviction relief cases. My question to you would be, do the taxpayers pay for that?
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
Yes, but should they pay for it? There are lots of good things in the world that need to be paid for, but they aren't all paid for by government. And why? Because it's not the government's job to fund every good thing in the world. And you could say, well, there are some legitimate cases. Would you also agree that the vast majority of post-conviction relief cases fail to make any change in the sentence for that inmate?
Yes, I would agree that that's accurate.
Okay, so in other words, we're taking a giant toilet, and we're taking massive amounts of public money and flushing it down the toilet for something that is not required by the Constitution, not required by the law. The state of Oregon just said, well, we're going to pay for all this because every once in a while it produces a good result. Now, if you want to get charities together, people who, you know, ACLU seems to go to bat for every criminal there is, they can go in and pay for that kind of thing. But Bill, tell the taxpayers who are listening to this, who are now being told almost half $1 billion every 2 years is not enough to pay for the constitutionally required lawyer that you're guaranteed to get if you're accused of something that could leave you convicted of a crime and perhaps imprisoned. So you have to hire a lawyer for that person. They're saying almost $440 million every 2 years is not enough. And I've said the place to find the money is stop all the post-conviction relief. And if you say, but for that rare case where somebody, you know, got a raw deal, and even though they've had all their appeals all paid for by the taxpayers, in post-conviction relief, they get a change. They're either unconvicted or their conviction is overturned or it's dramatically reduced. Fine, do that some other way. But why should the taxpayers pay for it? Can you tell me?
Well, I think the initial post-conviction relief isn't that detailed of a deal. They pretty much get an attorney.
Bill, you're dodging the question. You're dodging the question. I don't care if it costs 10 cents. If it takes 10 cents of a lawyer's time, give a reason why the taxpayers should fund something for somebody who's probably, by the time they get to that point, they've had their initial trial and their sentencing and all the expert witnesses and blah, blah, blah. You know, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money, and they've exhausted all their appeals. And you say, now I want post-conviction relief. It costs 50 cents. Tell me why the taxpayers should pay for that.
You know, I'm not going to be able to give an answer that's going to be satisfactory, because the reason for post-conviction relief is because you had a bad attorney who didn't do their job correctly.
Which is BS. Bill, here's the thing. Look, a lot of these lawyers that are defense lawyers, that are public defenders, are very, very good at what they do because that's all they do. Most other lawyers don't spend the majority of their time before the criminal courts representing criminal defendants, do they? So when you hire somebody and so the people who are public defenders who do it all the time are uniformly not bad lawyers at it. And then routinely, once somebody's convicted of a crime, they say, well, I had a bad lawyer. And oftentimes the lawyer who represented them goes along with it, said, yeah, I was a bad lawyer. I was a bad lawyer. Let him out. Because all they want to do is let the criminal out. You what?
The lawyers always fight the PCRs. They don't want a PCR overturn on their record, on all the attorneys that I've worked with.
Okay, fair enough. But the argument that the public should be on the hook, especially if they're telling us we're short of money to provide lawyers for people who are accused of crimes today, who need defense today, and we're short of money, cut off the stuff that we're not required to do and put the money into what is constitutionally required. I don't think that's unreasonable, but Bill, you're a great naysayer. It is the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, providing honestly provocative talk for the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 years, and I'm glad to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and emails a bit later, but I want to talk about horse racing, and I want to talk about coffee. And I have to admit that I have a dog in the fight. I haven't placed a bet on horse racing that I can remember in my entire life. I do play blackjack occasionally, although the last time was a year or two ago. But I do like Dutch Brothers coffee, and I have to admit that I occasionally patronize Dutch Bros because I think they do a much better job. They don't burn their beans, and I think I've told Travis Boersma that before. He is the CEO, and he is the man who, along with his late family member, founded Dutch Bros, and he's done very, very well. Travis, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
I understand that you would like to get horse racing and wagering back into the state of Oregon, and you've actually put your money where your mouth is, haven't you?
Well, just to rewind the clock here, about 3 years ago, Portland Meadows, where the commercial race meet was located, I learned was sold to developers. And so we wanted to do the best we could with what we had where we were to keep horse racing alive, and started down the path to pursue the commercial race meet license and become the license holder, and kept it alive down here in Grants Pass, where we've had a track since before I was even born. And I've had a lot of great family memories, and that's been something that's near and dear to my heart. So we've been on the crusade with not just keeping horse racing alive, but making an impact in a significant way in our community with economic impact and really providing jobs with what we call historic racing machines and a brand spanking new facility that's 32,000 square feet and ready to rock, and sitting here scratching our heads on the 11th hour wondering why we can't get this thing open, and there's some political challenges involved.
Well, that's why I wanted to get you on. You put $50 million of your own money into it. You've got 226 employees who could either have great jobs going into the future, or they could get pink slips, and that could happen very, very soon from the way I understand the situation. What went wrong? I mean, because I take it you fulfilled all the requirements the state demanded of you, didn't you?
Yeah, we've done everything that you can do. We've dotted every I, we've crossed every T. This is something that was at Portland Meadows. It's legal. It's been through legislation in the state of Oregon. And I would compare it to building your home or building a business and waiting to get your final occupancy permit, and you've done everything right, and for whatever reason, you can't seem to get that permit. And it's, you know, you don't get your occupancy permit before, you know, you start building. You get it on the last stage to then open your doors. And so we've been delayed. There's advisors to the governor who have asked the Oregon Racing Commission to stand down and not make a decision. And they've asked the Department of Justice to make a formal opinion on this. And we're sitting here going, well, how if something was okay in Portland Meadows up there and it's not okay in Grants Pass, Oregon? I'm
just curious. By the way, that example you gave of the occupancy permit, believe me, I've been there at one point being told you can't have final occupancy. It's sitting ready for Tina and me to move into. That was years ago. But I've been right there, and I think people who've been there know that. Do you suspect that the reason this is happening is because the governor's office is trying to mollify the Indian tribes who say, keep Travis out of this business, it'll undercut our casinos?
Well, you know, I don't want to speculate on anything. I have not been told any reason. Usually, if you don't get your occupancy permit to move into your home, they give you a list of things you got to still do. We've done everything, you know. So we're sitting here, and I talked to our legal team, and I said, well, we need a motion to compel a decision, and so we've done that, and we're still waiting, and. I finally have met with all the employees that we've hired, and I said, listen, you guys need to know your livelihoods are at stake here, and I'm going to keep you employed all the way through February, but we're waiting for a decision, and this is out of our hands, and we're not being told, we're not being communicated with. We don't know why there isn't a decision made already, and it really is more administrative. It's check the box and open your doors. So if there's something here that hasn't been done to the letter of the law, I'd like to know what it is.
Do you think that the reason they're referring it to DOJ is they're saying, DOJ, give us an excuse where we can turn Travis down because we're trying to fulfill some other political agenda, and he's done all the things the law requires. We can't tell him no. Give us an excuse for telling him no.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it makes you wonder, and you start to ask questions like that. And the fact of the matter is, no one is responding to the questions that we ask. No one is telling us why. So this is political, it seems. There also has been information that was shared that said, if the governor's branch, her executive branch, has any influence over the DOJ, then we will have the application denied. Now, I don't know what that means, and I don't know who they are, but I'm just sitting here, and the Oregon Racing Commission is is wanting to approve this project. There is no doubt about it. So I don't know, you know, horse racing is on the line. If horse racing can't go, it's dead. And that's a shame because it's something that's been around long before the lottery. And it's something that's been in our state now for many, many years. And it impacts not just Grants Pass, it impacts Tillamook, it impacts Prineville with the Crooked River Roundup, it impacts Burns, it impacts Union. It's an industry that will be killed. And I just am wanting to make sure people understand cause and effect here, including the governor. You know, I mean, it's over 200 jobs. It's $375,000 of rent that goes to the fairgrounds every year that helps with deferred maintenance and planning that they have for the future. This is an economic impact that, you know, we had an economic impact study done, and it's $10 billion in Josephine County. You know, so when we're in dire need of a middle class, when we're in dire need of, you know, providing jobs to people who want to work, and you know, you do everything to the letter of the law, you just go, well, what in the heck is going on here, man?
I agree with you, Travis, because my hometown at Tillamook, I see the horse races when I go down to the county fair. It's great. They do it. And the fact $10 billion in business, a couple of hundred jobs in a county that could really use some economic shot in the arm. Maybe the folks in Salem just don't care as much about people in rural areas of Oregon. It's something we've always said was true, and now this seems to be the proof of it. Travis, thanks so much for coming on, and thanks for backing up this great industry that, by the way, has been around a long time before the Indian casinos were around as well. That's Travis Boersma, one of the two founders. His late brother has passed away, but Dutch Bros founder. $50 million bucks of his own money, 226 employees' jobs on the line, and the governor's office can't find its way to yes. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your phone calls and your emails, but there's something I want to spend a few minutes telling you about because I think this is a hugely important development. I want to take you back to last year. And in last year, there was one school district in America that drew a lot of attention to itself. It was in Loudoun County, Virginia. But the reason it drew a lot of attention is because the powers that be, including a guy named Terry McAuliffe, longtime Democrat who was running for governor at that time, declared that parents had no business telling the schools what they should be teaching the kids. And a lot of us reacted to that very strongly because we said, hold on a second. You're telling me that you're going to actually say out loud what a lot of us think you've been thinking for a long, long time, and that is, parents, we run the education system. If we decide to indoctrinate your kids into critical race thinking, if we decide to indoctrinate your kids on sexuality issues, including homosexuality, lesbians, transgender, and all those other issues, you have no business as parents telling us what we are allowed to indoctrinate your kids to. Now, a lot of parents in that county in particular, although I'm not saying there weren't other parents in other school districts all over America who had the same kinds of exchanges, where they stood up to say, why are you telling my kid that the color of his skin defines him? Why are you telling my daughter that she can change her gender anytime she wants? Why are you telling both my kids you don't have to tell your parents about abortions, that you might be seeking? You don't have to tell your parents about birth control. You might go on. You don't have to tell your parents anything. They're really not in charge. We, the government-run schools, are in charge. That was the situation we were in. And then there was a letter. The letter went, we heard originally, from the National School Boards Association to the Department of Justice. And it suggested the NSBA characterized disruptions at school board meetings as a form of domestic terrorism and hate crime. Those are the words from the letter. The letter was sent to President Joe Biden September 29th of last year. And the department, I said it was sent to the DOJ, it was actually sent to the White House. Well, the DOJ, headed up by Merrick Garland, thank God he never got put on the U.S. Supreme Court, because the guy is morally and ethically flawed all day long and twice on Sunday. He claims that the way he heard about this letter and decided to act on it was that he read about it in the news, saw it in the newspaper, heard it on the television news or the cable news or whatever.
He made that claim and that there was no coordination with the White House. Well, I think that's a bold-faced lie, but that may be a subject for another day. Now we've found out more about the letter, and we found out more about how that letter came to be, because what happened was that allegedly the National School Boards Association, which represents school boards from around America, and an awful lot of states simply told the NSBA, we're quitting. We want out of your organization. We want nothing to do with what you're doing. But before that happened, the letter, news of the letter, got to the DOJ. And Merrick Garland, the top law enforcement official in America, he heads up the Department of Justice. He is the attorney general. And he announced that he was going to invoke counterterrorism laws and that he was going to set up a special. He issued a memo directing federal law enforcement, including the FBI and the U.S. Marshals, to help address what he called a disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against teachers and school leaders. Now, think about that for a moment. He said that what happened, the NSBA, which has now since apologized for and even rescinded the letter that they sent, the Department of Justice decided to sic the FBI on parents who show up at school board meetings and object too loudly to what the schools are doing to their kids, which I think every parent has a right to go to the schools and say, I don't like the mask requirements, I don't like the vax requirements, I don't like the political indoctrination, the political propagandizing of my kids, the sexual misinstruction of children. Well, it turns out that there's a little more to that letter than we might have thought. The Epoch Times is reporting that newly surfaced emails suggest that what happened to create that letter was the U.S. Department of Education played a role in talking the NSBA into writing the letter. So in other words, one agency of the federal government, the U.S. Department of Education, one of the least useful agencies in the federal government, if they did away with the Department of Education at the federal level tomorrow, every school child in America would be better off. Every taxpayer would be better off. Every teacher and every parent would be better off. So what happened is that on October the 5th, an NSBA school board member named Marnie Maldonado sent an email to a fellow board member saying, have we gone through all the correct procedures before we send the letter to President Biden? I'm concerned about the process by which this statement was made and the tone that essentially allowed the White House to direct the Attorney General to consider members of our community domestic terrorists. In response, the woman she was writing to wrote back and said there were communications issues. She also mentioned that the then interim director of the NSBA told officers he was writing a letter to provide information to the White House from a request from Education Secretary Cardona. Hold on a second. So you have one of Joe Biden's agencies that reaches outside of the Department of Education to the NSBA and says, hey, will you write a letter to the White House and tell the White House to get the DOJ to sic the FBI on American parents? Now, if that's the case, then the whole thing was just made up out of whole cloth. It kind of reminds you of what happened in the Russia conspiracy, where Hillary Clinton and the DNC decided to get a fake document created called the Russia dossier. They did so through Perkins Coie, the Seattle law firm that passed the money on to Fusion GPS, that hired the former secret agent and all that. They generate a document that nobody wants to look at because it's full of crazy stuff, but it gets the official stamp of approval because people like John McCain and the FBI were all pushing this document saying it's legitimate. This kind of sleaziness where a federal agency talks a private organization, the NSBA, into writing a letter to the White House so the White House can then say, gosh, look, the community is worried about these domestic terrorist parents who are showing up at school board meetings to complain. On top of that, Attorney General Merrick Garland said he based the memo he wrote, sicking the FBI on parents, on the NSBA letter, which in turn mobilized the FBI and U.S. attorneys. If Secretary Cardona actually did this, the education secretary decides to get somebody else to write a letter because he's concerned. And that letter goes to the White House and then is heard by the attorney general, who then tells the FBI, we're going to consider parents who complain too much about the government schools that, by the way, those parents and other taxpayers are paying for, and their kids are under the thrall of those government-run schools. All of this was set up by the Biden administration. I think that Secretary Cardona should probably resign from the position, because if that's the way they do business, pretending that a private organization has lodged a complaint with the White House, when in fact it was the education secretary that set off the whole process to begin with, I think that's shameful, and I think President Biden should have to answer for what was done by his education secretary. You know, maybe his staff can write him something he can read off a teleprompter or something like that. In any case, glad to be with you. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails. I was kind of tempted to run that soundbite from Joe Biden in which he vowed, I won't just go after COVID. I'm going to shut it down. He said it about a dozen different times. Of course, most of those times were before he became president. After he became president, all he could complain about was that he arrived to find no plan. Well, actually, he arrived to find a plan already underway, a vaccine already developed and being put into the arms of millions of people before Joe Biden ever took the oath of office just under 12 months ago. And I'm wondering if Americans are getting sick and tired of Joe Biden's waffling and prevarication and obfuscation and every other kind of avoiding the subject when it comes to COVID. So I thought we'd talk to Gates McGavick, who is with the Republican National Committee as its Director of Strategic Communications. Gates, welcome to the program.
Hey, Lars, thank you for having me.
So, I mean, in some ways, the Democrat Party and Joe Biden are doing a real favor for the RNC by completely screwing up the situation when it comes to schools, when it comes to businesses, when it comes to mandates, and they've kind of shown their hand. They've said, we're going to make people do things. And then the courts say, to a large extent, no, you're not going to do that. This right. isn't exactly the way to prepare the DNC for victory this coming November, is it?
No, I mean, they've given us, you know, a strong hand, but it's very sad. I mean, it's really unfortunate. You know, more people have died from COVID under Biden's first year than did under President Trump. You mentioned earlier, I mean, when Biden came into office, there were already 900,000 shots being administered per day thanks to President Trump's vaccine. The Trump administration had a real plan to deal with the virus, and, you know, Biden ran on the promise of, quote, shutting down the virus, and just recently admitted that there is no federal solution to COVID, which is, you know, I think what Republicans have known all along. And so that was Biden's one campaign promise, I think, is a big part of why he got elected. And, you know, from top to bottom, he has failed since he got in office.
And by the way, Gates, I might point out, since you're the Director of Strategic Communications, did you notice that Joe made that admission? There is no federal law role. I'm just going to hand this back to the states and declare that it's not my problem anymore. He's Pontius Pilate washing his hands. He did it between Christmas and New Year's, when most people are not paying that much attention to what politicians are saying because they're spending time with their family and friends.
Yeah, I mean, talk about strategy. That's the whole Biden thing, right? I mean, he's only done, I believe, 22 interviews since he took office. By this point in President Trump's first term, first year, he had done 92 interviews. That really shows the kind of, you know, there's no transparency with the Biden administration. His handlers, Jen Psaki, Ron Klain, they don't want him in front of the camera. They don't want him being transparent. They're going to save his press conferences for when other things are happening at the same time. Because they are very aware that they have a, you know, completely incompetent president who can't do much more than lie. And, you know, by Biden's own standard, he tweeted during the campaign that President Trump should resign because of COVID deaths. And by Biden's own standard, he has surpassed President Trump's COVID deaths. And so by Biden's own standard, he should resign. But I'm not sure that he remembers saying that.
No, and can you imagine what the reaction of the Democrat Party would be if they got stuck with Kamala Harris, who I just saw Biden's latest approval ratings. His approval ratings are in the, I think they're at 33. They were at 36
right.
about a month ago. And his disapproval is now above 50%. But if you want to find somebody who's got even lower approval ratings than Joe Biden, one of the few names on that list is Kamala Harris. So if they get rid of Joe, then they're stuck with Kamala and whoever she chooses.
I mean, they don't have a deep bench. I mean, you look at Kamala Harris. I mean, I'm sure you remember during the 2020 primary, she announced her campaign to maximum, you know, mainstream media fanfare. And then she got fewer points than Andrew Yang in Iowa and dropped out before the Iowa caucus. She's just not very good at this. The American people rejected her in 2020, and they would do it again if Biden were to go away. Unfortunately, we're stuck with a Democrat Party that is getting increasingly radical because they are following the lead of the far-left squad, AOC and her cohort. And you're seeing a president who, you know, wanted to be president his whole life. He's been a career politician for about 50 years, and he's doing a horrible job. It's no wonder his approval ratings are so low. I mean, everything is more expensive. Crime is up. And COVID is still raging through the country. I dare you to find one area where President Biden has done a better job than President Trump.
Well, because, I mean, even today, I started off by talking about the inflation problem yesterday. And we're at, you know, we haven't seen inflation like this since 82, basically the hangover after Jimmy Carter. And we've got tens of millions of people who aren't working but don't appear headed back because our unemployment rate's so low. And you say, is he going to focus on any of that? No. He went on down to Georgia and said, no, I'm going to come down and condemn the kind of changes made by the people's representatives in Georgia, which were vastly supported by the public in Georgia. And he's going to go down there and say, you guys are all so wrong. The people of Georgia are wrong. Your legislature's wrong. And I'm right. You should let us take over the election. Because after all, if we don't have a federal takeover, we can't win this November.
Yeah, that's the whole problem. He has nothing else to talk about. And so he's using what he calls voting rights, but is really election integrity, to try and divide America. I mean, you saw him go down to Georgia yesterday, and he literally said, if you support election integrity, you're on the side of Jefferson Davis. I'm on the side of Abraham Lincoln. Can you think of something more divisive to say? Translation,
no.
Joe Biden said, if you support voter ID and basic poll watching for both parties, you are a racist. I mean, that's complete nonsense. It's total political opportunism. Look, the fact is, polling shows that Americans support basic election integrity policies. About 4 in 5 Americans support voter ID. About 90% of Americans support a ban on ballot harvest. Over 2/3 of Americans specifically believe that local officials should set state elections, not Washington, D.C. bureaucrats. And yet Democrats are pushing the exact opposite. And if you don't agree with them, well, you're a racist. I mean, it's not a winning strategy. There's a reason Stacey Abrams didn't show up with Joe Biden in Georgia. This is a losing game. The fake outrage is easy to see through. And at the end of the day, Americans just want basic election safeguards.
You know, that's the other thing, Gates, that you bring up, that he's become, as a president who hasn't even been in office 12 months, he's become toxic to his own party. To where, like you said, Stacey Abrams, who has ambitions. I know she says she won the governor's race the last time, but she didn't. And you say the president's coming to your state. Are you going to show up? No, I'm going to stay as far away from it as I can. How does he become that toxic?
I mean, I think you've seen it from the start, right? I mean, Joe Biden's term in office has been nothing but a series of crises. We started with the border, which is still going, by the way. You know, record-breaking entries to the southern border, fentanyl spreading across the country. Fentanyl is currently the leading cause of death for young Americans. And then we pivoted from the border to Afghanistan, which is, you know, maybe the biggest American foreign policy disaster in, you know, 50 years. And now prices are skyrocketing, crime is up in pretty much every major city, all of which are controlled by Democrats. I think on every front, Joe Biden is failing. He's not engaged. He's not competent. He doesn't communicate with the press in any meaningful way compared to President Trump. I mean, you can look at a supercut of times that he has forgotten people's names, you know, lost his train of thought, been late to press conferences, taken, you know, beach vacations at his Delaware beach house. Meanwhile, the world around him is burning. And I think that's how you become toxic. The thing about Joe Biden is he doesn't seem to care. This is a career politician who finally got the presidency he'd wanted. You know, he ran 3 times. He's wanted this for several decades. And now he's here, and he doesn't care if Americans are struggling. He got what he wanted. And that's why you're seeing all these horrible metrics go up while Joe Biden does nothing.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. Gates, thanks so much for the work you do for the RNC, and I appreciate the time. Well, I know we'll be talking over the next 12 months.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Lars.
You betcha. That's Gates McGavick, who's Director of Strategic Communications for the RNC. By the way, if you're wondering if I'm being fair, I'd be glad to have the strategic communications person from the DNC on to ask a few questions of him or her. But in the meantime, I can talk to you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the last 22 years this year, with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And one of the calls we expected today is from candidate for Oregon Governor and Sandy Mayor Stan Pulliam, who joins me now kicking off his Main Street Heroes Tour. Stan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lars. We're super excited to hit the road.
All right. So I want to know what issues you're going to hit, because it seems like there's a raft of them right now. We could start with the closing down of Oregon schools. Let's get your take on that.
Unbelievable that we're closing more and more schools. You know, they never talk about when they close these schools. They blame it on teachers, you know, that we have a labor shortage. But they never mention the fact that they just fired, you know, tons of teachers across the state in the Portland metro area because of their vaccine mandates that's hurting their labor shortage. And you think about everything they do right now, whereas they fire the teachers, the airlines, you know, they have to fire their employees that back up the airlines. And then, of course, the national news, they want to point it to the Omicron variant and COVID-19. And That's not what's causing these problems. It's the politicians and their mandates, Lars. That's what's happening right now.
See, I think you've got a rich thread of issue there that Oregonians would respond to. I've been pointing out to people that in Washington state, we had a 90-hour closure of Snoqualmie Pass, which is pretty unprecedented. And you say, well, they just had a tough time plowing all the snow. No, they did just what you said. They fired a whole bunch of snowplow drivers for not taking the jab, a job that is inherently a very isolated job. You're sitting in the cab of a truck for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day. And I keep wondering, when you have the U.S. Postal Service warning the government, don't make us fire these people for not getting the jab or the mail is going to stop moving. They did that a week ago. You've got Amtrak saying we can't do it. You've got some hospitals in America saying we're going to hire back our unvaccinated staff because we can't operate without them. You've got a great issue there, should you choose to push it, to say, are you going to demand that the government, realizing that these mandates were a mistake and they are destructive and they're causing more damage than they even promised to correct, and reverse the decision? Because I know that Kate Brown is not going to reverse her decision, and I figure Jay Inslee won't either.
Well, you're absolutely right, Lars. And, you know, my wife, Mackenzie, she sent me a story earlier today talking about how these hospitals are going to be bringing in nurses that have COVID but have been vaccinated. If you haven't been vaccinated, but you don't have COVID, you're not allowed in. But you can actively have COVID, but if you're vaccinated, you can go back into the hospital system. It makes absolutely no sense. And what we're continually told from the get out on this thing is to follow the science, Lars. And yet it seems like everyone around us is doing everything but actually following the science.
And Oregon is so anti-business. I just talked to, I don't know if you ever stop at Dutch Bros for coffee, but the guy who, along with his late brother, started the whole chain, he's got a whole operation going. He wants to restart horse racing in Southern Oregon. And it's legal. He's done. He's crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, checked all the boxes. And the governor's office is trying its best to try to destroy this, even though he's got $10 billion worth of potential business. He's put $50 million of his own money into it. He's got 226 people who are looking at a pink slip at the end of next month. And yet the Brown administration is telling the DOJ, find an excuse why we can kill this whole idea. The state has become anti-business, and you know that.
Absolutely right. You just gave one example there with the racing. But, you know, you can look at the Jordan Cove pipeline out in Coos Bay, which would have meant thousands of jobs for an area that's been decimated, you know, with the closure of a once great timber industry here in the Pacific Northwest. It's nearly impossible to do business in Oregon. We just kickstarted this bus tour at Heroes Cafe in Portland, where I was talking to the business owner there. Not only has he had to fight against these closures and mandates, he's had a fight against wage and hour requirements and red tape. But nearly a year ago, Antifa shot out his windows. And so you think about the anti-business climate in the state. Then you look at the defund the police movement, the mandates, the shutdowns. You truly are not giving just, you know, normal folks that just want to make a living. They just want to make a living and put food on the table for their families. They're not able to do that here in the way that we're leading Oregon right now.
They've been pro-criminal and anti-business. And this provides a great opportunity for you and the other Republican candidates to get out there, remind Oregonians of that, and say you've got a choice. And if you decide to vote for the same thing over again, you're going to get the same result.
That's absolutely right. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly and expecting a different result. Hope everybody visits our website, stanpulliam.org, and gets involved in this campaign.
You know what, Mayor, I was going to ask you to mention that because I often get people saying, well, how can I help out the campaign? I just want to see some people offered some choices. And it was funny, I saw Willamette Week, which is WWeek.com. They did a survey of all the governor candidates. And all of the candidates, I mean, they divided right on party lines with one exception, because all the Republicans said keep the schools open. And all the Democrats, but one, said close them down. And the one who wouldn't is the one who is, the at this point, the Democrat front runner is Tina Kotek, who refused to give an answer. I mean, Stan, this is a great opportunity for you and other candidates, because when you've got Democrats who won't even comment on one of the biggest issues, bread and butter issues of the day for parents and taxpayers and everybody else, Tina Kotek is going to sink her own campaign.
That's absolutely right. And you think about the leadership that we've had in this state with Governor Kate Brown. She hasn't been accountable to voters either. And that's nothing but more of the same. I mean, when you're talking about the future of our state, our children, the virtual learning, the hybrid, they're nearly last in every statistical category nationally in education. For the person who wants to serve as our chief executive of our state to not even give an answer to one of the larger Portland metro area newspapers.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And I'm glad to be with you. I warned you last year, this year is an election year. We're going to talk to a lot of candidates. We've even kept the door open to allow Democrats to come on, although we do get a taker now and then, but usually we talk to Republicans, because the Democrats, when you get right down to it, at the end of the day, are kind of cowardly. They don't want to stand up and actually say in public what they believe or be asked tough questions about that. One person who does not meet that description is Heidi St. John, who is one of the Republicans running to replace the Republican rhino, Jamie Herrera Butler, in Washington's District 3 for Congress. Heidi, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Lars. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I want to ask you about something. When we talked about the things that you might talk about on the show and I might ask you about, this Board of Health meeting today, and I've talked about it all the way into last week, you know, when we found out that the State Board of Health was seeking the authority to add COVID to the list of diseases for which the public health officer in any county in Washington state could say, well, we need to quarantine some people and we need the help of law enforcement. Now, some people took that further and they built it into big conspiracy theories, but that piece of it was on the agenda. And then the Board of Health, I think, got very, very concerned because they got a massive blowback. And so they're kind of lashing out in all directions. I haven't had a chance to, because I've been on the air, I haven't had a chance to watch their hearing, but I'm anxious to know what happened. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to some of what the public had to say or not.
Yeah, I've been listening in off and on, and so far I've heard nothing. You know, so far I heard at the very beginning, I think there was some 3,700 people on that call, and what I heard them say over and over is, hey, we're not going to address this, and people started dropping off the call, which is, I think, what they wanted. I've had several meetings I've been in and out of all day, so I haven't heard anything remarkable. I think the Board of Health got caught red-handed, and the people of Washington State are sick and tired of the tyrannical overreach of the government, which is why they're getting so much blowback. If people like me hadn't seen with my own two eyes, you know, these quarantine centers, people are scared. They don't trust the government anymore. And you can blame Jay Inslee for that. You can blame Joe Biden and the tyrannical edicts of a tyrannical government. This is not freedom. And I think what you're seeing is a tremendous response from the people of Washington State who are saying, no, we're done with this. We're not going to put up with it anymore. And they caught the Board of Health red-handed. Now the Board of Health's trying to walk it back. So we'll see what happens.
Well, and what they've done, I've had a few people criticize me, listeners, who say, well, you were wrong about this. I said, no, they're saying you're wrong about quarantine camps and things like that. What I said was the State Board of Health was seeking this authority. And I know that when government agencies seek an authority, it's not because they don't think they're going to use it. They may not be using it right away. But anytime somebody says, can we have permission to do X? I assume that at some point they say, we think we might use X. And once you give them that authority, good luck getting it back. So when you tell me 3,700 people, that's got to almost break a record for the number of people logged on to a public hearing to take part. You'd think they'd be thrilled. Why? We've got thousands of people in our state who actually are interested in what we're doing. I bet they're used to having Zoom meetings with half a dozen people tuned in.
Right. Right. And we realize now we can no longer remain spectators in this. This is not a spectator sport. This is a constitutional republic. It doesn't work unless the citizens participate in it. And we have not participated. I think it's important for people to remember that the Puyallup Fairgrounds not that long ago was a Japanese internment camp. And people keep saying, well, that couldn't happen here. But Lars, you hit the nail on the head. What they're asking for is more authority. And what the citizens of Washington State are saying is, no, we're not giving you more authority. We don't trust you with the authority we've already entrusted you with. You have proven now that you can't be trusted. And so for all these people to, you know, for the Board of Health now, which are basically cowards in my estimation, to recognize that they have upset the people of Washington State, I hope it's a wake-up call for them, because we're not going to let them continue this tyrannical march toward what we don't even recognize as a constitutional republic in this country anymore.
By the way, I want to get to some of the federal issues that you would deal with as a member of Congress if you're successful in beating Jaime Herrera Butler and becoming the congressperson from the 3rd Congressional District of Washington. Joe Biden went to Georgia yesterday and said he wants to bust the filibuster, and that's over in the Senate. But he wants to push through Senate 1 and House Resolution 1, which would be a federal takeover of state elections. What should we be saying about that?
We can never let this happen. I think that, you know, anybody who cares about election integrity in the Congress, one of the very first things we need to do is make sure that the federal government gets its hands out of the elections. The best way for us to ensure election integrity is for smaller municipalities to be watching over their own elections. And we know, because I've lived in Washington State now for a long, long time. We all remember Dino Rods, who we all remember how things have happened in the state. We have had a rough go of it since mail-in ballots, right? We don't go to the polls anymore. I'd like to see us going back to the polls. We should be able to show ID, show where we come from, show why we belong in that polling place in the first place. Joe Biden and the Democrats want to federalize our election system, which would be a disaster for free and fair elections in this country. And if we haven't learned anything in the last 2 years, is that these people want the federal government in everything. And the federal government wildly outside of its jurisdiction. I would fight this with every fiber in my being.
Joe Biden also seems to, I mean, as of this afternoon, he's saying, well, yeah, this inflation thing, it's a worldwide problem, so we're going to need the world to participate. It's almost as though he wants to ignore the fact that massive inflation is now hurting Americans on a daily basis. When they pull up to the pump, when they go to the grocery store, when they buy a used car, it's hurting them right now, and he's saying, not really my problem, as though every problem in existence is not his problem anymore. He just gets to be president and read off a teleprompter.
Well, that's when he remembers that he's president, right? I mean, Mitch McConnell said it really well this morning. He said that Biden is behaving profoundly, profoundly unpresidential, the most divisive president in the history of this nation. And it's time for the American people to hold him to account. And the best way to do that is to elect conservatives in 2022 to at least stem the bleeding. Let's put a tourniquet around the Biden administration and keep them from terrorizing this country anymore. The guy doesn't want to take responsibility for inflation because he doesn't want to take responsibility for anything. He doesn't want to take responsibility for the horrible way that the federal government is handling the Rona, which is why you and I got censored last week off of YouTube.
We
don't
want
to take responsibility for any of this stuff.
I mean, I wear that as a badge of honor. You know who I think's got a real problem, Heidi? Do you know Kim Wyman very well, the former Secretary of State?
I don't know her well.
Okay. We're trying to get her on the show because you know what her new job is? Her new job is working for Joe Biden at Homeland Security as the person in charge of federal election security. And I thought, I wonder if I can get her to tell me, would Washington State, with you as Secretary of State, have had better run elections if the federal government made all these things that they want to change and take over at the federal level? I don't know how she's going to give an answer to that. So I want to ask her, What would you do? Are you going to endorse Joe Biden's federal takeover as a former Secretary of State? Or are you going to stand up and say, this is wrong, this is bad for elections? We're going to look forward to talking to Kim Wyman. And Heidi St. John is running to replace Jamie Herrera Butler in Washington's Congressional District 3. Heidi, thank you so much for the time. Coming up, should people who live on the streets, the so-called homeless or houseless or concrete campers or drug-addicted street dwellers, whatever they are, should they get special protection under the law the same way groups based on gender, race, and creed get special protection? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Always glad to get your calls. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Nick Shivers. Go to nickshivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. nickshivers.com for all the details. Our Twitter poll today: should the threat of Omicron be closing public schools? Now, I ask for all three of the Northwest states, although I pointed out there was a survey of the gubernatorial candidates because Oregon has a governor's election this year, and it splits right along party lines. The independent candidate, Betsy Johnson, says keep the schools open. The Republican candidates say keep the schools open. And two out of the three Democrats say keep the schools open. And Tina Kotek, former House Speaker, who wants to be leader of a state, says she has no answer to the question, which I think should tell you everything you need to know about Speaker Kotek's, or former Speaker Kotek's, answer to all this. That if she doesn't have an answer on one of the biggest, most front and center issues for parents, for students, for teachers, for taxpayers, if she has no answer, and this is not something where you can say, well, she hasn't had a chance to think about it yet. After all, we've all been anticipating for about the last 2 years, what are the schools going to do? Are they going to stay open? Are they going to close down? So it's not a brand new issue. It's something she certainly had time to lend some thought to, and she has no answer. If you tell me, I would love to talk to a voter who says he or she plans to vote for Tina Kotek, because if you tell me that, I'm going to say you want somebody as divisive as this, who's divisive, and then when you ask her a question about something that really is an issue for people, you say, well, no, I really don't have an opinion on that. If you're running for Congress, I guess you could say I don't have an opinion. If you're running for governor and you want the job where 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you have to be able to provide big answers to the biggest issues, and you don't get any advanced warning like you do if you're in the legislature or the Congress, where, what, how are you going to vote on that bill, Senator? And you say, well, I don't know, we haven't taken a position yet. When you're governor, when they call you at 2 a.m. and say, we've got a big problem, a dam is broken, somebody's been shot, whatever, you don't have time to say, well, I'll get you my position on that in a week. Now to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Michael's listening on the Radio Northwest Network and KPNW. Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars. I was wondering what your thoughts might be on the delayed implementation of the real ID that was required and how that might be tied in with this voter ID
thing. I don't think it ties in with voter ID, but Michael, real ID, the bill that was passed, the law that was passed, federal law that was passed within a short time after 9/11, 2001, so we're talking about 21 years ago, said that the states had to come up to speed and make their IDs real ID. And of course, Oregon decided not to do that. Washington State has the enhanced ID that you can use as a passport to go to, say, Canada without a passport. And it's a good idea. But the idea that you should prove that you are legally resident in the United States and that your ID would prove that, I'm in favor of it. And the fact that Oregon, in particular, among the 50 states, dragged its feet on that forever, I think is unconscionable. I thought after 9/11, after the terrorist attack, especially knowing that the 19 hijackers had something like 60 different driver's licenses among the 19 hijackers, because they were using fake ID to be able to operate here until they could carry out their terrorist act that took almost 3,000 lives. I thought the very least we're going to do is make sure that we clamp down on people coming into our country who might, you know, do ill, and that we're going to clamp down on ID and things like that. How it ties into voter ID? It doesn't tie into voter ID, because what Joe Biden wants, what the Democrats want, is they want to pass what's called Senate 1, Senate Bill 1, or HR, House Resolution 1, And what that proposes to do is make some major changes in the way that elections are held. So you have states, sorry about that. You have states that have strict voter ID laws that say, if you want to vote, you got to show picture ID at least once. And once you're registered, then the ID has been shown one time. Many states have been very sloppy about this. What this would do is it would tell the Department of Justice that they could veto state election laws, including those that affect voter reg, voter ID requirements, and maintenance of accurate voting lists. So you could tell a state, don't clean up your voter rolls. And when I say clean them up, Michael, you understand if you register to vote and you vote in a few elections and then you don't vote for a decade or so, you may have moved, you may have died, you may not be voting anymore. They take your name off the list after a period of time. And it's usually a pretty generous period of time. If they pass this law that Joe Biden wants to bust the filibuster to get through the Congress because the Democrats can't come up with a majority to pass a law otherwise, it would allow the federal Department of Justice to tell Oregon, to tell Washington, and tell Idaho, you're no longer allowed to insist on voter ID. I don't see that one necessarily ties in with real ID, but if you have a tie-in, tell me what it is.
Well, I was just thinking, if they're capable of, if this is supposed to be a serious piece of ID that you are required to get, it wouldn't be a stretch to me to make somebody verify that they are actually able to vote. It's just
Okay,
crazy.
Maybe I missed what you said. Michael, you're not required to get ID. Now, try operating in any modern society, any place in America without picture ID.
Right.
I mean, without picture ID, how do you cash your paycheck? How do you open a bank account? That's just for starters.
As I understood, this real ID has something to do with your ability possibly to fly domestically.
Oh, is sure it does. Correct? Because if you have a driver's license from Oregon and it does not meet real ID, then they keep getting extensions that allow them to not do it for a while. But at some point, you're going to have to show a real piece of ID. And if the TSA says to you, but your state does not keep illegal aliens from getting driver's licenses, then we're not going to let you get on a plane. Yes, it does have the effect, or will have the effect, but Oregon, for whatever reason, has been allowed to just delay and delay and delay, because the reason they want to do that, Michael, is that years ago, the issue was whether we should give driver's licenses or government picture ID to illegal aliens. And the legislature passed a law by a 2/3 majority saying we're going to give driver's licenses to illegal aliens. And less than a year later, the voters put it on the ballot and by a 2/3 majority said, no, you're not. More recently, the legislature has decided to simply take that vote by the people, ignore it, and grant the ability to get driver's licenses for illegal aliens. And there's no sense to it. Why would you give picture ID to somebody who is breaking the law just by being in the United States? I've never been able to have a liberal tell me a good reason to give picture ID. They say, why? And this is how crazy they are, Michael. They say, if an illegal alien who's already breaking several laws just by being here, working here, transacting business here, having a bank account here, he or she is already breaking a bunch of laws. If we give them a driver's license, they will become more law abiding. That's their argument. You know, that they'll get insurance for their car. They'll license and register their car legitimately if you just let them have that picture ID. I mean, New Mexico tried that over a decade ago, and they found out that the uninsured driver problem did not go away when they started giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens. Glad to be with you. When we come back, we're going to talk to a member of Congress about what happens when assaults happen, but then the person who did the assault gets a free pass because of his age. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I hate to make this guy wait, because when Mike Garcia was flying missions off the USS Nimitz in a Hornet, an F-18, I don't think he had to wait for anything. All eyes were on Mike Garcia behind the controls of that plane. Congressman, it's good to have you on the program again. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Hey, Lars, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And by the way, thanks for your service in uniform, 30 missions into Iraq in 03. Just fantastic background that you've got. First person in your family, I think, to go through college. And you went to the academy and the Air Force Academy, and then you had to go to Georgetown. I hope that didn't wreck things for you, because I can't imagine two more politically opposed colleges in America.
That's right, yeah. Actually, the Naval Academy and then to Georgetown.
I'm sorry, Naval Academy.
That's all right. Great learning experience. I got to work on my social skills a little bit at grad school after the Naval Academy, so it was fine.
But they didn't make you woke and all that stuff. I'm glad to hear that.
Look,
you've raised an issue about a district attorney. Now, I know you're a member of Congress, but this is a big deal. Members of Congress from California, from L.A. County, are saying that George Gascon, who I think of as George Soros' hand puppet down there in L.A. County, they've been having diversion programs that actually allow some really serious criminals, but criminals who are still teenagers and not officially adults, to basically get a pass?
Yeah, effectively. And you know, this is an important issue. Like you said, I'm a federal representative, but the goal of what I'm doing here, and I've called for his resignation because I think we've got to put a spotlight on these policies, because, as you know, where California goes, so does the nation. And a lot of these woke policies, progressive criminal justice policies that folks like AOC are pushing, and frankly, it's become the platform of the Democrat Party, are very dangerous and real. And in our case, we've got Gascon, who, like you said, was bought and paid for by Soros, who is, as the district attorney, who is historically someone who's fighting for the victims and putting criminals behind bars, is actually, in his case, advocating for criminals and not just not prosecuting them in this case, but with this diversion program, they actually never really go in front of a judge, and they're actually never processed and inducted into a court system at all. So there's almost zero footprint or history of these folks who are committing very serious crimes. And this is someone who can sexually assault you at knife point at the age of 17 and not be charged, not see the inside of a courtroom, and be put into this what's called a diversion program. And when they come out of it, after some rehabilitation programs, not have any record, not have any recourse to file aggravating charges if they commit additional crimes later on. So this is a free pass, and this is on the heels of Gascon effectively allowing for things like $0 bail, early release, the downgrading of felonies into misdemeanors and misdemeanors into slaps on the wrists. And it's a very dangerous policy that he drove San Francisco into the ground with, and now he's doing it in L.A. County. And he's behaving like the Penguin from Gotham City more than he is a district attorney in a United States city.
It sounds like it. Well, listen, I've been following all these Soros specials, Kim Cook of Illinois, Kim Fox of Cook County, Illinois, but as a representative of the people, this has got to really bother you, because when the people send folks either to their state legislature or to Congress, say, we want this to be a law, and laws are passed, and then you get one person like George Gascon that can effectively gut the law by saying, oh, you wanted all those penalties for people who commit these kind of crimes? You're not going to get them. He's allowed to basically reverse everything the people's representatives have done, in your case in Sacramento or on Capitol Hill.
That's right. And it's amazing how much power some of these positions have. And he can undo the goodness of hundreds of people, dozens of elected officials, with the stroke of one pen. And in our case, you know, our district in northern L.A. County, we were conducting the largest drug bust in our nation's history. Back in June of last year, we seized about $1.2 billion worth of illegal marijuana grows. These were bad guys.
Wow.
Most of them were illegal immigrants with illegal firearms. We were finding dead bodies in the field, dead animals everywhere because of the fertilizers. And I was partnering, in our case, with a sheriff, L.A. County Sheriff Villanueva, who's a Democrat. So it was a bipartisan operation. And after we spent millions of dollars and hundreds of man hours, Gascon just didn't charge any of these guys. These guys were let out. A good majority of them were illegal immigrants, not charged, not held accountable for anything. And they're back on the streets with, at most, a slap on the wrist. So this is something that frankly is pissing off most Americans, regardless of party affiliation. They just want to know that when they call 911, the police are going to show up.
when folks commit crimes, they're going to be charged, they're going to be held accountable, and they're going to be put behind bars for an appropriate amount of time. And none of those things are happening right now in L.A. County. And it's because of Gascon. It's because of one individual human being who's got an allegiance to someone like Soros, who is a dystopian fundraiser rather than law and order. And it's this is why this needs to go.
I'm talking to Navy veteran Congressman Mike Garcia, who represents California's 25th district. And, you know, one of the issues you bring up is the use of illegal aliens. Now, I don't want the illegal aliens to be in our country. I want them to go home and come in legally the way we do for a million people every year. But in my neck of the woods, the grows, and some of them are massive. They just busted one that was $500 million worth of pot. And they found hundreds of people who are effectively slaves. They weren't allowed to leave. These weren't workers who were being paid wages. They were illegals brought in and told, you're going to work and you're going to live in horrible conditions and everything else. To the extent that you're employing human slavery, I have some sympathy for those people. And yet this kind of allowing this kind of activity to go on without any prosecution just means we're going to get more human trafficking. You would think your Democrat, you know, friends on the other side of the aisle would say, oh, we're with you with that, Mike. We don't want human trafficking either. And yet I don't hear any hue and cry about it.
Yeah, I mean, the reality and the irony of all of this is that the most inhumane thing we can be doing right now is opening our borders like we are and subjecting these human beings who want to come to the United States. I can't blame them, but they've got to do it legally. And they're actually being subjected to the cartels and living conditions that are, frankly, the most inhumane conditions that we can wish upon anyone. And the far left and those who are pushing for open borders like they are, as well as not, you know, prosecuting the folks who are here illegally, are actually enabling this and promoting it. And I gave a speech on the floor a couple months ago where I said, look, if you're really supporting DACA and if you really are looking out for the interests of the Dreamers, then secure the border so that we can actually have those conversations when it makes sense. No one in their right mind should be talking about these things while the borders are wide open. It's like mopping up the water on the floor when there's a busted pipe just flowing, you know, hundreds of gallons of water per minute. You got to fix the leaking pipe and then look at cleaning up the mess behind it. And that's the opposite of what the progressives are trying to do right now.
Congressman, while we've got 1 minute left, I want to know, Joe Biden made this push to Georgia yesterday. They want to bust the filibuster. I know that's in the other chamber, and I know you're in the minority in the House chamber. But are they going to manage to push through this federal takeover of elections?
I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. Look, this is a continuation of them changing the rules because it benefits them. They're trying to pack the courts. They're trying to end the filibuster. They're trying to ramrod spending bills and legislation through the House without actually having anything go through the committees. They're allowing for proxy votes. They're trying to pass H.R. 1. They're literally doing everything they can, and to include having Washington, D.C. become a state, which is unconstitutional as well. This is them trying to preserve their power. This is the last gasp of a dying breed of folks who realize they overplayed their cards. They're not popular with the American people. And comments that Biden made yesterday were just absolutely absurd. And to be honest, the woes of slavery and the history of our nation and the Confederacy were attributed to the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party were the ones pushing back against the Civil Rights Act in the 60s. So this has got their problems on it as much as anyone else's, but it's them seeking to divert attention away from our crises and start talking about a problem that frankly doesn't exist.
Congressman, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. That's Mike Garcia, Naval Academy graduate, member of Congress from California. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get to your phone calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Should the threat of Omicron be closing public schools? I would say no to that. I think that when you listen to some of the experts we've talked about and talked to about Omicron, that for children, the chance of serious side effects of catching this disease is not something you want to go out and catch deliberately. I'm not suggesting Omicron parties like they used to have chicken pox parties, but certainly it is not enough to close the public schools down. And then you've got the bizarre nature of the government's answers to what's going on right now. They say if you get vaccinated, you can still come back to work, even if you've tested positive. But if you're not vaccinated, then even if you test negative, you can't work. And all of these contradictory ways of going about it. The kids have lost enough over the last 2 years. They do not need to lose more because the public schools, under the control of the teachers' unions, are saying, well, we just don't want to be open. We want to close down. We want extra days off. We want. Well, what about the kids? Well, when they went out, when Willamette Week went out and did a survey of the candidates running for Oregon governor. Thank God Oregon has a governor's election this year and we get rid of Kate Brown one way or the other. I only wish that Washington State had a governor's race this year so that we could get rid of Jay Inslee. The Democrats uniformly said close the schools, except for, as I mentioned, Tina Kotek, who, as a governor candidate, doesn't have an answer to the question, which I think sums her up very nicely. Republicans said do not close the schools, and the one independent candidate, Betsy Johnson, has said don't close the schools. So I would say a majority of the governor's candidates have decided no, it's not a good idea to close the schools. A majority of the Democrats, they're doing exactly what the teachers' unions want them to do, and they're saying close the schools. In any case, you can find today's Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, there's also crazy stuff going on outside. We've got the State Board of Health, which held its meeting today, the one we've been talking about all the way back to last weekend. I really appreciate all the emails. I mean, we've had hundreds of emails from people saying, do you know about this State Board of Health meeting? Do you know that they're seeking to get the authority, if necessary, to use law enforcement to be able to forcibly quarantine people if a public health officer decides that it's necessary? And then the State Board of Health made a quick reverse. They apparently had more than 3,000 people on the line on a Zoom call, so that all these citizens were saying, we're interested in this. And what does the State Board of Health do? They decide they're going to back away from the whole thing and say, no. We weren't asking for anything like that. Why? The thought never even crossed our minds. Well, I don't believe that. But there it is. That's what they're saying. Tomorrow, I'll know more about what happened in the hearing today, because the hearing happened while I was on the air. So I apologize. I wish I was the multi-talented guy who could listen to a public hearing in one ear and conduct a talk show in the other ear. I'm not that talented. And then we've got concerns about the Oregon legislature. And I want to talk to House Representative Greg Smith. He's not available yet. He is a Republican, but he's done something that at least on face value looks pretty good. He's introduced a bill to repeal last year's Senate Bill 554, which had to do with gun storage and more gun laws that aren't going to change anything for the criminals. But he decided to introduce a repeal. And if you say, well, that's a great idea, here's the problem. Two problems with this. Number one, with a huge Democrat majority in both the House and the Senate in Oregon, a supermajority in one house, near to supermajority in the other house, the repeal of Senate Bill 554 has almost no chance of passing. But one of the weird things that happens in legislatures is that if you introduce a bill about a particular subject, like guns, and you know it's not going to pass, the other side, the side with the majority, the Democrats, can take that bill because they have what's called a relating to clause. As long as that bill had something to do with firearms, the Democrats can turn it into yet another anti-gun bill. Now, this has been pointed out by our friend Kevin Starrett at Oregon Firearms Federation. It appears to be either a colossal mistake by Representative Greg Smith, which plays right into the hands of the anti-gun crowd, or it was either a mistake or it was something he did deliberately. People understand this. Greg Smith is not new to the legislature. He knows how the rules work, and I think this was a terrible decision on his part. Let's go to Glenn. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the Lars Larson Show, and thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars, thanks. I've never done this before, but I'd like to actually get your opinion. You know, we always pit the Democrats and the Republicans against each other. I'm pretty much eat what you kill and pay a little bit to the social system, not the other way around. But I feel like the whole system is set on a oligarchy that no matter whether it's Democrats or Republicans, the money is going to flow through the big boys. And I bet the big boys, the top 1%, the top 0.25%, do not pay the 50% of the taxes in the United States. So it's all a big sort of keep us busy. Well, I'm talking about the top quarter. I mean, Warren Buffett. People like that have millions of income almost weekly, but they're able to write it off.
All I can tell you, Glenn, is listen. The IRS, if you ask the IRS who pays the taxes, whether it's an IRS run by Joe Biden or one run by Donald Trump, they'll tell you how the bill gets split up. The top 1% pay about 40% of the entire federal tax bill. The top 10% pay about 65%. And half of the people who have a W-2 paycheck pay nothing.